WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies, filling in for Terry Gross. The 1970s series Policewoman has emerged on DVD, featuring veteran actress Angie Dickinson playing the sexy vice cop Pepper Anderson. Though she was in her 40s when the series opened, Dickinson spent much of her time impersonating hookers, going undercover in women's prisons, and acting as bait for sexual predators. Dickinson won a Golden Globe Award for the role. Here she is playing a prostitute, having a drink with a hustler, Carl, played by Joseph Campanella. He's trying to get her in on his traveling casino ring.
Ah, relax.
You want to get me stoned out of my head before I pick up your marks?
We got time. Then we might have a little fun before you, huh?
Forget it.
Come on.
We don't need it.
I know what I need.
Not me, not now.
Yeah, you, now.
Oh, come on, Carl. Are we in business or in high school? Okay.
Angie Dickinson is a former beauty queen who began acting in the mid-50s. Her breakout role came in the film Rio Bravo, where she played opposite John Wayne. She also starred with Lee Marvin in The Killers and Point Blank, Burt Reynolds in Sam Whiskey, and Roger Moore in The Sins of Rachel Cade. Terry spoke to Angie Dickinson in 2001, when the remake of the film Ocean's 11 was released. Dickinson starred in the original Ocean's 11, made in 1960, as the estranged wife of Frank Sinatra, who leads a band of men planning to rob casinos. In this scene, Sinatra is trying to reconnect with Dickinson after years of separation.
Now just sit there and don't interrupt me. I've got a very big deal going on. Large chips, carloads of them.
That sounds familiar.
That might be so, but this time it's true.
Oh, good. I like to have rich friends.
This is one rich friend who wants to spend a bundle on you.
Gee, thanks.
Okay, that's settled. On the morning of January the 2nd, I'm going to pick you up. I'm going to hop down to Rio, so you pack a bag.
You're serious? I honestly think you're serious.
Of course I'm serious.
A week's trip to Rio?
Yes.
Oh, Danny, what a prize you are. The only husband in the world who'd proposition his own wife.
What was it like to work with Sinatra on the set, since you already knew him? I don't know whether you were just friends then or whether you already had a deeper relationship.
He was, I think he was seeing Juliette Prowse during this time. I'm almost positive about that. So that was good, because it doesn't work very well when you're romantic, because things can happen at home and interfere on the set and vice versa. So we were just friends at that time.
Why do you think the guys on the Rat Pack needed a group? I mean, a lot of people like to be loners. But there was a period when, you know, Sinatra and Sammy Davis Jr., Dean Martin, Peter Lawford, they hung together and they were identified together.
I think Frank always liked company. You were not one of his favorites if you didn't hang in there. He was a nightclub person. He was a late person all his life, and he did not want to stay up late alone. Whereas Dean Martin was very much a loner. He liked going home, not necessarily alone, but not with a bunch around him, maybe a lady or one friend. But Frank always enjoyed the more the merrier, if they were his pals. And Sammy liked people around him. I think that came from the stage and nightclub where you're basically entertaining all the time.
When you were romantically involved with Sinatra, was it ever annoying to have him always want to be in a crowd?
No, it's not even a matter of wanting to be in a crowd. He just didn't want to be alone.
Right, but wanting to have like good friends surrounding him, yeah.
I'm one of these that says, I mean, all right, already we saw them last night. Why can't we just see somebody else tonight? He had a tendency to stay with people that he was safe with, very comfortable with, and, you know, no facade, and so he found that very protective. Since I didn't need that, I was not a Sinatra, and there was only one. We'll never know what it's like to be watched every breath you take, and analyzed and criticized and judged, or adored. So he needed that shield of friends around him where he could totally be himself and not feel ogled. And so I understood that. But yeah, I would have. I'm more the loner.
Well, you ended up, after you had worked for a few years, starring in a great Western, Rio Bravo, which was directed by Howard Hawks. It also starred John Wayne, Dean Martin, and Ricky Nelson.
Yeah, and Walter Brennan,
who
practically made the movie. I know he's not billed as one of the stars, but boy, didn't he make it special. That's a very good example of the woman's role was almost always just, I used to call it, waving goodbye to the husband on the horse, or running into his arms when he came back. And that was the typical role for a woman in a Western, with the exception of Destry Rides Again, Marlena Dietrich, and Feathers in Rio Bravo. She was very, very, very much her own again, and didn't cower around the men. She held her own, and it was early in the feminist type of view. Howard Hawks was very well known for making all of his women quite strong, whether it was Westerns or I Was a Male War Bride or Bringing Up Baby. He liked strong women. He married strong women.
What's your favorite scene in Rio Bravo?
Well, the favorite scene that I had to do was the last scene where Duke is comes up, and I don't know what he comes up to see me for, and he sees me in this rather risque outfit. He says, "What are you doing in that?" And she says, "I'm going down to sing." She says, "You didn't know I could sing, did you?" He says, "You're not going down there in that outfit." And she starts to cry. "I thought you'd never say it." He said, "Say what?" And she says, "That you love me." And he says, "I didn't say that." She says, "Yes, you did. You just don't know it yet." And it's just wonderful.
Well, why don't we hear that scene?
Okay.
"Where are you going?"
"Downstairs."
"You better not."
"Wyatt, I better not."
"Because I'm still sheriff. You wear those things in public, I'll arrest you."
"You... Oh, John T. I've waited so long for you to say that. I thought you were never... You know, the funniest way of saying things. Just when
well,
I think
right,
you're going to say one thing, you say
now.
Something
Get
else.
Get those darn things off. I'll wait outside."
"No, no, no. You don't have to go. I can use the screen. Besides, I want you to stay here because the other thing is all over now, isn't it? I'm trying to hurry, but I'm all thumbs. What I had to go through, put on these tights, ask a lot of questions, start to walk out. I thought you were never going to say it."
"Say what?"
"That you loved me."
"I said I'd arrest you."
"It means the same thing. You know that. You just won't say it."
A scene from Rio Bravo with John Wayne and Angie Dickinson. In The Killers, you start opposite Lee Marvin. Ronald Reagan was the heavy in that. I think it was the last movie that he made. Were you surprised when he became president?
You know, with all due respect, and I do adore President Reagan, and saw him on, I would say, 6 or 7 social occasions after he was president and while he was president, but very surprised when he became president, yes. He was... since that was his last, he did that film because he had a contract to satisfy. He owed Universal one more picture, and they said, "This is it." And he said, "Okay, get it over with." He didn't like the movie at all, and his character, and rightly so. But he just wanted to end that contract and get on with politics. So he was studying all the time on the killers. He was always reviewing and delving into huge piles of paper. He was on his way to become governor then. And I was most surprised, yes. Although he couldn't have been lovelier on the set, he just didn't strike me as presidential material, but he sure was.
Did you vote for him?
I did not vote for Ronnie, I'm sorry. I'm a Democrat.
Did it still hurt to not vote for a friend?
Yes, it does. You don't feel like a traitor, but it's a little harder to put that X down opposite him. Yes, because I really liked him and always did like him. I always liked Nancy very much. Used to run into her because we all lived in Brentwood, and used to run into her in the store, and she was always so nice, but I still was loyal.
Angie Dickinson speaking with Terry Gross. We'll hear more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Let's get back to Terry's 2001 interview with actress Angie Dickinson.
You got cast as the star on the TV series Policewoman, which a series you did for about 4 years. You played Sergeant Pepper Anderson, a divorced woman working undercover. This is a pretty groundbreaking series because you had like a woman action hero starring in prime time.
It was absolutely groundbreaking. There was none before. And that's why I mentioned the date, is because I just happened to look it up the other day and I realized that I had not re-emerged yet in 74. I did when I came on with the show, but that was around September or so.
Mm-hmm.
The only shows that succeeded to star a woman were the comedies. And this was the first drama starring a woman, our show, and the first cop that succeeded. There were a couple of other attempts that they died off right away. So I'm very proud of that.
How did it affect your personal life to do TV for 4 years?
It broke it. they don't even do what I did anymore because they have more of a team. It's just virtually impossible to do what I did, to be in everything and to work 12 hours a day and every day. So I had no social life. I didn't see a foreign movie for 5 years. I look at that. I used to love to go to the best movies, and that was my criterion to say I never had the extra time to go take in a foreign movie in all that time. So I lost friends, lost a husband. My daughter still talks about how lonely she was for 4 years while I was at work. So it takes a terrible toll.
The husband you lost is when you broke up with Burt Bacharach.
Oh, yeah. But I would have lost him anyway because we weren't going to make it. But it contributed to it early.
Angie Dickinson, you started acting in the 1950s. Of all the different fashion eras that you've worked through, what were some of the best and worst trends in clothing, hair, and makeup? Some of the best and worst.
The 50s were the pits. The 50s for the clothes was the worst. The 50s for the hair was the worst. We all looked like Esther Williams. I certainly did. And
Bouffant hair?
No, Bouffant didn't come till the 60s.
Well, those tight curls, is that what you mean?
Yeah, tight curls.
Yeah, yeah.
And Doris Day, we all, I mean, you're hard-pressed sometimes to say, is that Lana Turner or is that me? because the hairstyles and the clothes were so similar. There was no individuality and no rebellion yet. So the 60s for the clothes, for the men, was great. That was the first time with the Beatles wearing their hair, quote, long, which was not long. But they had sideburns and long hair. And then for costume, they had beads and narrow jackets and wild colors and bell-bottom pants. And the miniskirt was the greatest change for somebody who had some good-looking legs. And they were good on women without great-looking legs. it was just wonderfully revolutionary. You now could be an individual with your hair and your wardrobe.
They wore those pale lipsticks in the 60s, those pale pinks.
Yeah, I always wore the pale lipstick. I don't even know what I wore in the 50s, but in the 60s, that was certainly my era. And I know José Ibar, the great hairdresser, he says, you and Anne Margaret, you never change. You're in the same makeup all these years, and it always looks great. I'm not sure how great I look in it, but I just can't let go of that. And I wear pale lipstick because I look dreadful in dark lipstick. There's only one reason why I wear it.
How did you become a blonde?
I became a blonde because I was doing a movie, newly under contract to Warner Brothers. This might interest you as the feminist kind of aura of human rights. Howard Hawks finished Rio Bravo, and he put me under contract for it, of course. And I was thrilled to sign to be under contract to Howard Hawks. Then he asked for a 9-month postponement, or a 6-month postponement, I think it was, before he started paying me. And I had to give it to him, of course, because it was about a year after the movie was made that it was released. And one day, my agent told me I was going to get a part, a test for a part in The Bramble Bush at Warner Brothers. And I said, oh, great. So I went to the studio, and I said, hi, I'm Angie, and I'm here to test for something on stage 8. And they said, we'll get your pass for you. You've got your permanent pass right here. And I said, no, I'm just coming to screen test. They said, no, you've got a permanent pass. It's right here. I said, what do you mean? He says, you're under contract here. And that's how I found out from the guard at the gate that I was sold by Howard Hawks to Warner Brothers, which did not make me happy. And so I got the part. But since Barbara Rush was a brunette, and I was a brunette, they, of course, couldn't have two women the same color. They blonded my hair.
And that
seems so silly to me but that's how they, it was a very ordinary movie and not very good. And it stuck. I got to like it and I kept it.
But, you know, it's true. Like, actresses used to be seen as, like, the blonde or the brunette. Mm-hmm. I mean, that was such, it was seen as such an important defining characteristic.
Yes. Well, above all, you must not mix them up.
Right.
Now, I don't think I look anything like Barbara Rush at all. But when you think back, I must say, I go to some movies now and I say, I think that's so-and-so, or is it so-and-so? They look quite a bit alike. So perhaps the producer was right, but it certainly worked out fine for me because the blonde did, it worked better for me. I had very icky dark brown hair, still do.
Now let me ask you, you eventually ended up insuring your legs with Lloyd's of London for $1 million, and that got a lot of publicity. Was that a studio publicity stunt, or did they actually need you to insure your legs?
No, they insured my legs because this was when I was after Warner Brothers contract and I finished that or got out of it. Then I went to Universal. I was auditioning for the role of Gregory Peck's romantic interest in Captain Newman, M.D., and they said, you will get the part if you sign a 7-year contract. And I said, oh, God, here we go again. Get stuck in stupid movies for 7 years. But I had no choice. I wanted that movie, and it was a real coup at the time. So I accepted that. And so now they had to build me as a star if I was going to be worth my weight. And so they would do different tricks. And one of them was to insure my legs. So I said, now, you guys, is this legitimate or is this just a gag? And they said, no, no, it's legitimate, but just don't ask us how long. So I suppose they insured them for the minimal amount of time, whether it was a week, an hour, or a day. I'm sure it wasn't for more than a week.
Right.
But it worked very nicely. It was very good publicity. They were pretty legs, and there is something about pretty legs.
Angie Dickinson, thank you so much for talking with us.
Terry, I loved it.
Angie Dickinson speaking with Terry Gross. Dickinson's 1970s TV series Policewoman has just come out on DVD.